Welcome to Smart Web Creators. In this podcast, you will listen to creators creating amazing things on the web and sometimes just me talking useful web stuff. I'm your host, Davinder Sinkanth. Let's get started. We all strive for being more productive and organized in the online world while building client websites. Which online places you should spend more time and less time for better overall work productivity? Also, which tools you should use to stay more organized? This is episode number 22, being productive and organized on day-to-day basis, building websites with Tara Claes. Before we begin, if you are a Beaver Builder user, here is an amazing news for you. Mastering Beaver Builder course has relaunched with all new course content for Beaver Builder 2.2 version, and it is on discount as of now. So if you want to take your Beaver Builder knowledge to the next level, just head over to probeaver.com/master. That's probeaver.com/master. Also, if you've been enjoying this podcast, please do consider leaving a 5-star review over at iTunes. Just head over to smartwebcreators.com/iTunes. That's smartwebcreators.com/iTunes. Now, let's begin the show and see how you, me, and every one of us can be more productive and organized. Hi, Tara. How are you?
I'm good, Davinder. Thanks for having me today.
Same here. It's been a pleasure talking to you again. Probably we are talking after how many months?
It's been several months, but we had a time there where we talked pretty often.
Yeah, and it's amazing to see you grow in the web world so fast in the right direction. So that is what we are going to talk about, productivity, being organized. But before we begin, why don't you give a quick introduction about your online life?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm Tara Claes, and my main business is Design TLC, which is an agency that officially formed around 2010. And before that, I was doing more of a graphic design, stationary, paper-oriented business, where I built a few websites for some friends and clients in Front Page, and then decided not to use paper anymore. And so I decided to focus on purely web and computer digital design. So I chose WordPress. It was recommended to me, and really learned probably in a backwards, mixed up way, as a lot of people do, and discovered the WordPress community, I believe, in 2013 when I went to a WordCamp. And so, like so many people, that really opened my eyes and changed things for me. I learned about Genesis at that WordCamp and a lot of other tools. Before that time, I think like a lot of people, I really struggled with finding a theme that fit, and I would spend a lot of time trying them out. And I was building child themes off of 2010 and 2012, and just really was not having too much fun because there was so much to learn so quickly. So when I started using Genesis, it was a really big relief to realize that I could learn one thing and apply it in many different ways. And so I did that for a few years. And I met you, I think, through Carrie Dill's Office Hours podcast that she had, where she had, you could live.
Yeah, on Thursdays.
And ask questions, and you would ask a lot of questions and have a lot of comments. And so I think we connected after that. So a lot of people that I have met and my closest WordPress friends are originated in Carrie's show many years ago. So I was brought there because of Genesis. So really I had a lot of impact on my growth as a business person and a web developer. And now I have a couple of employees and have really been paying a lot of attention to how to run a successful business, how to communicate with clients, how to, as the mantra on my wall that I'm looking at says, work smarter, not harder.
Yeah.
And I still work all the time. Like when you have your own business, you can never have nothing on your to-do list. So I do enjoy working and being productive and getting things done. Just trying to rein that in is a challenge.
Yeah, cool. And your story from front page to WordPress to Genesis and now Viva Builder, right?
Yes, I didn't get there yet, I guess. Yes, so Beaver Builder, thanks to you, actually, has really changed
And you know
quality
what?
of
I
my life.
still
Yeah.
remember your code when I introduced Beaver Builder to you, and you said, "Hey, this is cheating." And I code this to so many people. Yeah, it's cheating. Enjoy. You know, work smarter, not harder.
That's right. I really thought it. And I've said that to you many times and to other people also. And I actually met the Beaver Builder guys at a conference and said that too. And I think the general consensus was that it's not cheating at all. And as I embraced it and realized what I could do with it that was better for my clients and what I could and how my clients could actually edit their content more easily, it really was an easy transition once I sort of, I guess, bought into that because I really was always very self-conscious about my lack of high level coding knowledge. And what I have learned, in terms of my CSS skills, which have evolved a lot over the years, again, thanks to you, I can really do more with Beaver Builder than just the basic stuff. So I've done some really cool things using CSS with Beaver Builder that I'm really proud of. So I feel like my work is better because of it.
Cool. So you've been building a lot of websites in, last few years, and building websites over the surface looks easy, but when you have multiple clients, being productive and organized is not easy. So that's what we're going to talk about and focus on. So let's
Great.
start with your work routine now. How is your work routine from your Mondays with regard to clients, building websites, doing, all kinds of related work tasks? Because Mondays is the big work day.
Right. It's the fresh start of the week. So I started about, I guess, just a little over a year ago, really trying to think seriously about my planning process. It's really when you work for yourself, it's very easy to not be directed in your, not have a focus of your day and just kind of be responsive to whatever requests are coming in and whatever's on your plate. And you kind of tick things off one at a time. I'm a big to-do list kind of person. I like to have a list of things. And I love digital tools. So I've tried out so many timekeeping things, so many list making project management tools to try to find what works for me the best. And really the main thing for me is writing it down. I use something called the Panda Planner now. And I've tried different planners as well. No matter what digital list I have, for me, writing it down really makes it more of a focus and is more satisfying to cross things off. And I do that every evening. So every night I look at what's scheduled the next day. And I really think about what I need to accomplish that day. I do have a whiteboard calendar where I can sort of plot out web projects in different stages of development when I have multiple projects going on. So I can sort of overlap them and say which one's in design, which one's in testing, that kind of thing. And so I can lay that out as well like that. But really every night, and especially Sunday night, looking at the week ahead, it really helps so much. I can't even express enough how much it helps to actually really sit down and plan before you start your day and your week.
So you plan every day, or like Monday is the day where you do bulk planning for the whole week?
I usually on Sunday night plan the week ahead, and then every night also before I sort of shut down for the night, I will list in my planner what I have scheduled for the next day and what things are my priorities for the day. We also have a Slack group called the Business of WordPress that Sarah Dunn and I started after Carrie Dills shut down her office hours Slack channel, Slack team. And we have a great group there that is really also focused on running their businesses. And a lot of us are really focused on productivity. So we have a channel within that Slack group that is a weekly check-in. We have a Sunday night, Monday morning check-in where we've a lot of us have read The 12-Week Year. I don't know if you're familiar with that book. But one of the keys to that process is that you're accountable for how productive you are. So you score yourself every day, every week on how productive you were in getting your goals, your tasks met, which are there to accomplish your goals. So you plan out your goals, which tasks you're going to work on to accomplish those goals during the week, and you give yourself a score. I usually do it on Sunday night, sometimes Monday morning, and we share that in this Slack channel so people can look at what your score was, if you scored 50% or 80% or whatever, however productive you were, and you kind of can share that with the group. So it's almost like being on a, you know, like a diet. You
and have to really think. I'm sure the score is going up, right? On week on week basis.
Yeah, I mean, it depends, right? Some weeks it does and some weeks it doesn't. And it depends on, I think it also really helps you focus on what your priorities are and what you're listing as your expectations. For me, I can really tend to think about all the possible things I want to get done and try to put them all in one day. And if you do that, you're just going to constantly feel disappointed in yourself because you've underestimated how much time things are going to take you to do. So trying to limit and just say, okay, today I'm going to focus on these two things or these three things. And if I get those three things done, then my day is successful. And if I can get two more things done, that's great. But I'm not going to beat myself up if I don't get those.
So you plan on Monday, plan on weekends, like on Sunday, but what about working on weekends? Like, is that your thing or strict? No.
Oh, you know, I usually work a little bit on the weekends. It depends. Sometimes if I have a big website build out project that needs, 4 or 5 hours of time, I will try to do that on a weekend because I'm less likely to be interrupted. So I will carve that time out.
Yeah. Even that's cheating. We all cheat, right?
Yeah. Well, I think, and my children are grown and so they're not here. So I don't have, you know, soccer games and swim meets and all that kind of stuff to do on the weekends. So I do have a lot of flexibility with that. I'm trying to be better about not working all the time. I really love what I do. And it is a good feeling if you do need that 5 hour chunk of time. It's a really good feeling to get it done on a Saturday or a Sunday so that when you start on Monday, you don't have it looming ahead of you. So I confess I do that.
Okay, so you plan on Sunday for the whole week. What about the broader planning? Like, do you also plan for a month or do you even go to an extent of planning for a whole quarter?
Yeah, so the 12-week year, the way that that works is you actually do, it's called a 12-week year because the concept is that when you have a whole 12-month period ahead of you, you tend to put everything off till the last minute. And so you don't actually get as much done. So compressing into your year into really a quarter of time. So you do, at the beginning of that quarter, you plan out what are your main things that you want to accomplish during this next quarter and build out what tasks you need to accomplish those goals. And then you spread those out over the 12 weeks. So I plan on that quarterly basis, that 12 weeks, and then on a week by week basis. We've developed a little flow chart in the Slack group that we've kind of, each of us has made iterations of that for what works for us. And so every week I have certain tasks that I have plotted out for week one, week two, week three, and so on. And sometimes you might add something in there because you might discover a different task that you didn't realize you needed to do, or you might take one off or move it. So there's some flexibility, but yes, there is longer term planning and then daily and weekly planning too.
And you already mentioned that you are a pen and paper person and even writes on our whiteboard. Do you also use any online tool to plan your thing or just the physical stuff?
I find I tend to easily ignore the online tools, although I do use them because I will check them periodically. I use Todoist as my main list project task making tool. And I really like it a lot. And it integrates with a lot of other things like Gmail and Chrome. And I can share tasks with my team. So I do use Todoist. I just don't list my daily, you know, every day doesn't necessarily have the same level of detail that my written list has.
So now let's talk about planning for website projects. So you got a lead and client is interested in your website development service. Mm-hmm. Now from this point forward, how do you plan for client communication and get started with the process of gathering content, possibly, you know, having a design layout ideas and so on?
Yeah. I'm a huge proponent of the Google suite of products. So I really have when I talk to clients, when I onboard them, or before I even bring them on board, I tell them that I just about require Google Drive usage. So that means that the content is in Google Docs, that I do a sitemap in and a sort of a tracking sheet in Google Sheets, and that helps us have a working document. And I've tried some project management tools like Teamwork. My clients are mainly small businesses. Yeah. They're mainly independent operators who are oftentimes not very tech savvy and don't have a lot of time to spend. So trying to come up with a way to make it easy for them to coordinate with me has been a challenge. And I still have many clients who still want to send me a Word document or an Excel spreadsheet as an attachment. And then what happened ultimately, right, is that there's 7 versions of the Word document, yeah, and I missed the last version. And so I'm really trying to bring on clients who are willing to participate in my process. I'm at a point in my business life where I can be more selective,
yeah,
and really try to work with clients that I think it will be a productive and pleasant experience.
So you follow a very simple process. Even I do it. So just make a folder with the client name and put everything within, exactly, that folder, right?
Yep.
Even
images, I do that. Logos. Yeah. It's all in one place.
Yeah. It's simple, it's not, and it works. Emails.
Yeah, it does. And I think when you have a larger, when you have a client who has, when you've got multiple people that you're dealing with, and when they are already utilizing project management or communication tools other than email, then something like Teamwork or Basecamp or something like that could be effective. But
Asana,
Trello, all of those things. But I can probably think of 2 clients I've had in the past 5 years that would fit into that category. And so when I've tried to shoehorn them into something like a Teamwork, it doesn't really work. So yeah, there's no point in making them learn something else new.
So how do you self-plan for website design and development? Like, do you keep milestones for yourself, or you follow some secret routine that you would share here?
No secret. It's pretty basic. It's also in a Google Sheet. So part of my master planner Google Sheet with their sitemap also has a timeline in it. And I just plot out on my calendar. I look at what else I have going on, and I have milestone dates for myself as well as dates for the client when, say, design approval is needed. And then I share that with them, and I paste it into emails that I send to them. I do have an email series that I've developed. It's not automated. There are several people like Jennifer Bourne and Aaron Flynn who have similar things that I've read about and taken to heart, developed my own series. But again, my clients are not, they're not going to take the time to read a ton of communication from me. So it's really a matter of making them realize and know that I'm thinking about them and working on their business more, but I don't want to overwhelm them.
And yeah, besides Google Drive, Excel sheets, do you have any other tool that you use for website project planning and progress tracking?
No, for communication, I use Gmail, and there's a template system in Gmail that's through Cloud HQ. It's there's also canned responses in Gmail, but the Cloud HQ system allows you to develop a little bit more robust templates that you can actually pull in MailChimp templates that you've built so that they look a little bit nicer. So I use those for an email series when we're in the onboarding phase that sends them different information. So I do use that.
Client communication. Now, this can be a big drain on your time and even on your productivity. So which is your preferred method of client communication? Is it like all email, or you get on with video calls or even meet them in person?
Yeah. I mean, I really have a love-hate relationship with email. And I did create this email series, which is really delightful when you can utilize it. I think a lot of times the emails that you have with your clients, though, have to be more personalized, or they're answering specific questions and or clarifying something. And sometimes they're tense to write, you know, sometimes it's awkward to say, gosh, you've really exceeded your 3 rounds of revisions here, and so I'm going to have to start charging you. So I spend a lot of time and worry on those emails, and I don't like to. So oftentimes I have a rule with myself that when it takes me more than 15 minutes or so to craft an email, that I won't send it right then, that I'll wait and I'll come back to it the next day or later that day and review it. And then if I still don't feel like I can hit the send button, then I'll call. I won't even send an email. I'll just call, because at that point, when it becomes that difficult to put into words and into writing what you want to say, because you're worried about how it might be received, mm-hmm. it's better to just pick up the phone and call. Emails can be misinterpreted. So there's a lot of stress and time that's spent in email, but the majority of my clients, that is how we communicate. I've had a couple of really awesome experiences with clients who've gotten on Slack with me. And that's terrific, because you can get some really easy back and forth.
Yeah, sort of chat.
You're having a conversation. It's like a chat. Yeah. So I really love it when a client will do that. That's pretty rare.
So you have a Slack group just for your company?
Yeah, or I'll create one. You know, I'll create a work group just for it. Because when you have it, I don't have the paid version of Slack. So when you do that, then you can't really have a private channel unless you have the paid. I mean, not a private. Yeah, yes.
You can do direct messaging, but you can't have the private, you know, channels there, because everyone in the Slack group can see whatever you are. The only thing they can't see is, I think, the direct messaging that you do with one person.
Right. So if you have a general channel or something, then your clients could see that. And not that we really use that in my agency. I use Slack with my employees, and we mainly direct message. So it wouldn't be an issue too much, but I still feel like it's probably more professional.
The pain point of client communication, the other pain point is multiple projects. Now, majority of us have multiple projects running in parallel. So how do you keep your focus in finishing those that require maximum attention and keeping the sanity at the top of the head?
Right. Well, thankfully, I think for me, I've really cut back on how many projects I have at one time. I know people who have many, many going on at one time as one person.
Yeah, but I guess even in the beginning, you also went through that period, right?
I did. And I didn't like it, right? It's too much. You make mistakes. And so once I had an assistant who could help me, that was really helpful, because I could delegate tasks that needed to be repeated, or I could have content added in by an employee. So I do delegate more now, and I will outsource too. Say, you know, for an initial build or something like that, I could outsource that, or something that I know is going to take me a long time. So I will, if it gets overwhelming, then I do have people I can call on to contract for me.
And do you have any self-imposed limit on maximum number of web projects that you handle at a given time in this phase of your career?
I don't think I technically do, but my feeling is that three is enough. Mm. And so I think that would probably be the limit. I would love to just have one project that going at a time, and then have a few that are maybe having some tweaks. I have some clients who are existing clients and on with whom I have been doing additional work, adding on some landing pages and doing some Google ads, or extending some functionality, or adding a bunch of content, that type of thing. So all of that stuff, it's not necessarily a whole new web project, but it is additional work. So whether you have three new clients coming on board, I still have 20 or more that may be popping their heads up at any time. You know, I've got 60 clients that I manage. So
cool. Yeah. Let's talk more about things that drain our time. So we all have web things that often drain time, like be it social media or helping someone in the community, because these things just continue now, over period of few years since you've started working on web. Have you attempted to identify where your online time drain happens, and have you taken any steps to reduce it?
Yes, I have. I gave a talk at WordCamp DC, I guess it was about a year and a half ago now, on productivity. And I put myself through a productivity challenge where I really measured everything and tried to identify where I was falling short. And it continues to be my Achilles heel, which is email. There's no question about it. I use Rescue Time, which is a app that it's an extension in Chrome, but you can get a premium version and do reporting with it. I do have a timer I use that is Toggle, but I am not very good about turning it on a lot of
times. Yeah, you forget to click on it.
Yeah, or you forget to turn it off. But it does have a timeline, so it actually tracks your work, so you can go and see if you forget what you were doing. And I have some, you know, I have some little things set up to try to improve my usage of it. But I don't do a lot of billable work, so it's not like I'm losing money if I'm not turning it on. It's more for my own edification that I like to use it. But Rescue Time is really helpful because you can go in and set categories for different apps and websites, URLs, and it will categorize if it's productive or not. And I have a limit of 2 hours a day on email and communication, and I every day reach or exceed it. So I've been trying to turn my email off and just close it when I'm working, and that's pretty helpful. I do use Freshdesk now for all of my clients. I've trained them to use a support email address. So I have two employees who help with tickets. And so if there was anything urgent and my email was closed, I could still be reached. There's no reason for me to have it open all the time, except in my productivity challenge, I did a lot of reading and learning about productivity and the brain and how all of that works. And it is a satisfying feeling to be in your email, because it's like, what's the next thing that I can take care of that I can do quickly? And what's the problem I can solve, rather than I'm going to go learn Data Studio today. You know, I've got to sit and watch videos on how to do something new. I'd much rather solve people's problems that take me 5 to 25 or 45 minutes to fix. That time goes by way faster. So it's an addiction, email. It's a horrible addiction. I've been trying to unsubscribe from things, and I love to have inbox zero. So I'm always trying to keep it empty.
Yeah, no wonder you hear people say, I want a digital detox. I want social media detox. Like I see few people like closing their Facebook groups and, you know, coming out of social media. I think it's not just like one hit, like you close a Facebook group or you control your email thing. But then if you close your email, there's another distraction waiting for you. So the end, I think it's all about self-control, because for me, when I am online, I'm sitting in front of computer, I have everything open, Facebook, email. I have that self-control that I won't see that window. I'll just focus on the work part. And it's kind of a healthy distraction for me. Like I'll design something for like 20 minutes, because then I'll see, hey, what's happening there? And I'll just pop in there and come back. But then you need to have that self-control to come back quickly rather than just spend more 20 minutes there. And when I'm not working, my internet is off on my phone and every possible place that can distract me. So I don't get any alert, any message, and I don't do website maintenance. So that's never been a problem for me. So
that's good. Yeah.
I guess you need to turn it off. You know, you need to switch yourself completely off at certain periods in a day to probably keep your head in the right direction, I guess.
Yeah, it's very hard. It's a very hard thing to do. And when I did that productivity challenge, I took Facebook off my phone. And I loved that so much that now I actually have it back on my phone, because I sometimes get notifications and I have some client pages that I manage. But I spend less than an hour a week on Facebook for sure. It was stressful and too much of a distraction. There was just nothing there. I belong to a lot of groups, but I don't participate that much. I like Twitter, and I'll look at Instagram. And then the other big time suck is Slack. And we do have this Slack group that I love. I don't know what I would do without these people. They've become friends. Some of them I've met in person, and we just have a really great community. And so sometimes though, it drives me crazy because that little knocking sound of Slack is constant. I mean, so much happening. There are people having these conversations,
I should join them, right?
Yeah, or I'll turn it off. And there are people who spend way more time in there than I do, but I learn so much, and it's just a great, it's what keeps me going sometimes, having that community, knowing people are going through where
I'm a member of your Slack group, Business of WP, but yeah. I doubt I've logged many times there. I just log in when I get email notification of someone has tagged you or tagged everyone. I have stayed away from Slack. I've been a member of a lot of Slack, you know, groups like 2-3 years back when the Slack mayhem started. Like everyone was in Slack, Genesis Slack, you know, there was Bebo Builder. It's still there. But I don't know. I actually felt that Slack was a big drain. It's like you were constantly, you know, sticking your eyes on that one window, and it's like a instant messenger thing. Like, and there's so many people that even if someone stops responding you, there was two other people talking, and you will feel like, hey, let's see what they're talking about.
Yeah, and there are so many channels now. You know, there's a channel for everything. There's a channel for discounts and deals. We share, you know, special offers and mental health, and there's all, you know, there's a channel for everything. So, but I absolutely just, I try to limit it. Mm-hmm. But I really value the time that I spend there, because it is, when you're working alone in your house, it is nice to have some interaction with people.
Yeah,
that
real
you
humans.
To know, and that have things in common. So
real virtual humans, because they are still virtual.
Sort of, yeah.
Okay, so ever since you've started building websites, do you recall making any substantial work style changes that has increased your productivity with regard to building client websites, besides, of course, limiting your Slack access, Facebook access, and email control? To an extent.
Right. Yeah. The discipline that you talk about, for sure. Learning more about how to be effective and productive, studying those books and skills and trying to understand how that works. I'm reading another book now called Atomic Habits, which is fascinating and has a lot of great ideas as well on that sort of discipline and really understanding how your brain works, how you can train yourself to have good habits and drop bad ones. In terms of how I operate and build websites now, especially because I use Beaver Builder, it has changed a bit. And I think I use some tools that are different as well that help the process along. I used to do wireframes for all of my clients. And then, and through the Slack group, I've learned a lot of people have also stopped doing wireframes for most of their client projects.
Yeah, even I don't do it.
They can't visualize it. And so it's better to flesh out some content.
Some of clients will say, oh man, this is not what I have in my head, because they don't see any image. They don't see any graphic, and say, my competitor site is so shiny. And what you've made.
Yeah. But I think I felt like I needed to have that as part of my process, because that's what a professional web agency does, is that's the process that a web agency follows. And so you feel like if you're going to be charging professional rates for a website, you should be following this process. And similar to the idea of Beaver Builder is cheating, what are people paying for? Are they paying you to have are they paying you for the code that you're using or the process that you're using? Or are they paying you for the result of having an effective website that does what
they're just paying for the website? It doesn't matter which tool, unless you encounter a geeky client who want that you should use XYZ theme, ABC tool, ABC plugin, then it's a different story. And I'm sure you don't handle that kind of clients, because I know what's best to build a website, considering I've been there for a few years. So you don't tell me which to. If you want to, there would be people, but then you got to pay for what you are asking for.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So that's one thing that's changed. I don't think that I would say that I would never do a wireframe. There are some clients for whom I think it could be effective, or some projects where it would be really helpful to do that first. But for the most part, for a basic website, it's not something that I do.
But people have found a workaround when using Beaver Builder. What I've seen some people do it and do it successfully, that they will build a layout in Beaver Builder, like it would be a quick layout, and they will take the screenshot and share the screenshot, not the, you know, direct URL, and then client can come. It's just like you are sharing a wireframe, right? You are just taking a blank canvas, no header footer, and you are just building the whole layout within one Beaver page, and then taking a screenshot of it and, you know, sharing with the client, and at least client will get the direction.
Yeah, interesting. I haven't done that for a wireframe. I've done that for sections of design prototypes. So I use Sketch now for my design prototypes. And I absolutely love that. And it saved a lot of time. I find that my designs are better because I can really finesse them in Sketch and then export the graphics, the assets, the SVGs right from there. It's super great. But sometimes there are some things that I want Beaver Builder to do, and I want to make sure that I can do what I'm promising. So I will do it in Beaver Builder and then take a screenshot and drop that into the prototype in Sketch, just so that it looks exactly like what it would look like.
Yeah.
And it's faster if you're doing a, let's say, an accordion or something like that. You might as well build it in Beaver Builder rather than do the design in Sketch in some ways.
And it is still not cheating.
It's not cheating. No, definitely.
Okay. Now, a lot of us struggle to deal with shiny object syndrome. A new tool is here, a feature is here, and we forget our work and start exploring that new shiny object. Are you in the same boat?
Totally. Yes. I've blogged about it. I've spoken about it. Yes, it is. And especially, not to dwell on this Slack group so much, they're all probably all going to listen to this. But you know, that we are really guilty of that, because somebody will say, hey, have you ever heard of this SEO reporting tool? And it's like, oh my gosh, not the 12th one this month that I'm looking at to see if I should switch. And then you're pricing it out. I have spreadsheets comparing those types of things. So yes, I definitely am guilty of that. AppSumo is just a complete, it's actually great. I will say I've gotten some awesome deals with AppSumo. Are you familiar with AppSumo?
I have had kind of a good bad relationship with AppSumo. Yeah. Teams, like, mostly it's been disaster. Like, the I bought four of them, like, in the latest Black Friday thing. I think one was Deposit Photos, which is obviously
that's a great deal.
I'm gonna use it. Then another one was Social Bee. I set it up, I did it, and guess what, I was trying to understand the UI of it, and I said, I don't have time for this, because I already use Facebook Scheduler and TweetDeck Scheduler for scheduling things. And that's about it. That's what I actually need. I don't do Instagram or LinkedIn stuff to that extent. So I just logged out and never logged in back. There's another one I bought, Plutio. I had never even registered.
I bought Plutio also. Yeah. But you can get a refund in 30 days. So I will try it. And if I don't use it after a week, I'll get a refund for it. So I am pretty good about that. But there are some things that I buy that I forget that I have.
Yeah. So I bought another one. It's called Bookify. I set it up. I have never used it till now.
I have that, and I actually use it now. They've really improved it, and I really, really like it.
Yeah, so. But I bought it like the first time, and at that time the thing was a little rough, like you know, the styling and all that. Maybe they've improved, but then
they have.
As of now, I don't need that in my business. Probably if I need it down the line, that would be tool for me, because I already have it, right?
Yeah. Well, and when you look at the cost savings for a lot of these things, even if you buy a few for $49 that you don't use, the amount that I've saved, I mean, the Deposit Photos is like, just, I've bought a couple of those. That's a great, great deal. So yeah. So there are some shiny objects that are definitely worth buying. And I'm glad I take some time to do
Deposit
it.
Photos is really good for people who build websites. There's another one. I don't have a personal license for that, but all the agencies that I work, they have it, which is the Noun Project, which is basically an icon website. Like, they have like tons of icons, and those icons are really, really good. The beauty of that, you know, site is, like, once you find an icon, you can customize that icon based on the color you want, and you can download it in a PNG format or SVG format in any size you want. So that's the amazing part. And it's like just $40 for any year access and unlimited access. So
there's a shiny object I'm going to check out.
Not now, after the call.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So this was actually my next question. Which tools and services have helped you, you know, being more productive and organized? So one is like Deposit Photos. It has helped you being more productive, because you don't have to go to multiple places to search for photos. There's just one search bar, and whatever photo comes, I'm going to use it.
Yep. For the most part. Yeah. I still check out Pixabay and Unsplash sometimes too, especially for my own blog, but But yeah, deposit photos is definitely
yeah, but tool. For client websites, I stay away from free photos now because you never know whether that photo is actually free or not, and you get into a big trouble. So with deposit photos, at least you have the downloaded true. License.
Yeah, for client sites, the same. Yeah.
Yeah, and you have the download activity and download license in your account. So in case something happens, you will have some proof to show. But with you know things like Unsplash, I use those photos in my own thing, but not on client things because you never know whether that photo is actually free or not.
Yeah.
And well, they will just put a small disclaimer with small stars, which people don't read actually.
I have a story about that, but I'm not brave enough to share it yet. But yes, I can relate to that. Let's just say.
Maybe in 2020.
Fine print. Yes. Yeah.
Maybe next year.
Time to pass before I can feel comfortable with that.
Okay. Later. So. now these are the tools that help you to be more productive. Now, on the contrary, which tools and services platforms you've stopped using and because they were turning out as a big productivity drain? I know Slack is on your radar. What else?
Well, Facebook is probably the main thing that I've dumped and don't use anymore. For the most part, I started making a list just last week. I made a list of all of the subscriptions, all of the licenses and tools that I have that I use, and what just to see what I spend on that, on all of those. I was just out of curiosity, and it was over $8,000 a year of tools. But there really wasn't anything there that I could drop. They're all things that I use, some of them begrudgingly, like Adobe is expensive, and especially if you have a team.
You should try Affinity Photo.
I know, but I use InDesign a lot. Yeah. So
but they've got the new thing for Illustrator, and I think they also have something for InDesign. I just bought it like 2 months back, Affinity Photo, and I'm blown away with it. You know, it is almost like Photoshop. There are a few options here and there which are different, but it works, right. And it really works.
Yeah, I have probably thousands of InDesign files that I will need access to. So it just that have been with one of my clients that we do use InDesign every day. So it'll be really hard for me to dump that. But
Adobe knows it. That's why.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. So I do pay that. And I've heard that the XD, the new, it's like Sketch or Figma, that kind of, that's a really good Adobe product. So I may try that. Although I also own Sketch, so I might as well just stick with what I know. That's the problem, right? Is that you hear about things, and even Elementor, when it comes to page builders, I don't know how much time you've spent with Elementor, but a lot of people are really saying a lot of great things about Elementor, and I've just barely touched it, but it's getting a lot of good reviews, and I sometimes think, well, maybe I should try that, and then I think, why I've already invested so much in Beaver Builder.
I guess I also get a lot of questions. Hey, you always rave about Beaver Builder, why don't you try Elementor? It's not that I've not tried Elementor, it's good what it does, but the thing is, my philosophy is choose a tool and be an expert at that. Now yeah. I've already chosen Beaver Builder, and I know ins and outs of Beaver Builder, like even a small feature thing, I would know it. Now, why would I dump it and go with Elementor, even though it has more shiny features? But then I don't need those shiny features in things that I build. And my philosophy is, till the time your tool is working on foundation level, you should stick with it, because there will be, in every tool, there will be few things that are missing, and you can, you know, bring those things by adding additional things. Like in Beaver Builder, you can get Beaver Themer. If you are looking for fancy stuff, you can get UABB, Power Pack. There's so many plugins. But I guess, and now they've added the new, Elementor has added new pop-up feature, which is nice. It's a shiny object, but I don't need pop-ups. I don't like pop-ups. And even, and for pop-ups, I use a SaaS product called ConvertBox, which works really well for me. And I have a lifetime license for it. So why not?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I have a similar philosophy, but it's hard not to be tempted sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah, so. But then you know, every ecosystem has a lot of products. Like there's Beaver Builder, even in just in Page Builder, like the competition is fierce. Like people are so loyal to their page builders. Not just, we are just talking here about Beaver Builder and Elementor. Wait till you see the community that's around Oxygen Builder or Brizzy Builder. Even they are full loyalists and they will say, this is the best. You got the crap.
And now there's all these Gutenberg block people too, so
and guess what, and that ecosystem is gonna blast in a big way when they complete their phase 3 and 4, which no one knows what it would be, but obviously they are saying it's a secret, but it's not a secret, it's just they are trying to be a stripped down basic version of a page builder. It's just they're gonna give you a playing field where other third-party people can build blocks and let people do more sophisticated things, but on Gutenberg editor platform.
Yeah, that's really amazing. The blocks people are building are really cool.
And I won't be surprised, like all the modules that we use in Beaver Builder or even Elementor, they might be available as blocks down the line, because it's not difficult for them to do that conversion. It's pretty easy for them. And they already have ecosystem. They already have people who are paying them for that thing. So why would they not?
Yeah, I just saw a really cool one on Twitter. Rich Tabor is
building Go Blocks.
It's really cool. Yeah, really cool. That.
Yeah, Rich Tabor and Jeffrey Carding. I don't know. I'm sorry if I'm butchering his second name, but Jeffrey, he's from, I think, Philippines or Thailand. They are both are like partners in that. And I've seen it. It's really amazing. Like they've been adding new things. Everyone is doing it. Like Genesis people, like, it got acquired by WordPress Engine, and WordPress Engine acquired Atomic Blocks, which is just like Core Blocks. So you would expect StudioPress themes to have Atomic Blocks. There's Core Blocks. There's Ultimate Beaver Block, Ultimate Blocks from Ultimate Beaver people. So just wait and watch. There's so many of them.
Yes, that's the shiny objects galore there too, just learning all that new stuff.
Okay, now let's talk about your toolbox. So which are your 5 favorite tools that power your online business? Yeah, just 5. I don't want the list for which you paid $1,000.
No, I know. I'll tell you, I did write them down. So my number one is Alfred. Do you use Alfred?
Nope.
Do you know it?
Nope.
So it's a Mac. It's a Mac app.
That's why I don't know, because I'm PC. You know, I'm PC.
I know you are. I don't know what if there's something like it. And I don't even use it for all that it can do.
Okay.
But it's, there's a keyboard shortcut for a lot of different things, like opening up a bookmark or calculator or all that kind of stuff. But I have tons of snippets in there, code snippets, my email address, messages, you know, use my support at email. Like, so I just do a, you know, 3-key
sort of macros.
Yep, macros, exactly.
Plus launcher, like you also launch things with it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So there, I used to use Text Expander and Alfred, and then Alfred out of the snippets. And so now I use that, and I can't, whenever I'm on somebody else's computer, I start typing the keystroke for my email address or something, because I just have it so ingrained.
And you think, why is the magic not happening?
Right. Yes, I just love it. So that's probably my number one tool tip. After that, I would say Boomerang for Gmail, which I also absolutely love, because as I mentioned, I'm addicted to email and I like to have my inbox be empty. So I will use Boomerang to clear out my inbox so that something comes back later. I use the send later feature all the time, or inbox pause, follow up if I don't hear back. So that's also an amazing tool. I pay for that one, the pro version of it. And then Chrome Inspector is, I don't know if you consider that to be a tool, but
I just right click on it. That's about it. For me, that works.
On what?
Yeah, Chrome Inspector is the best. Yeah,
I use it all the time, and I don't know how I could function without it, honestly. There is a cool little Chrome extension called Visual Inspector. Have you looked at that at all? It's a Chrome extension by Canvas Flip.
I believe it shows styles over the web page. So
yeah,
I actually use Font. I forgot the name. It's called Font something. So what it does is when you click over some text, it will...
Oh, what font?
Yeah, what font? I forgot the name.
Yeah, I use that too. But this Visual Inspector has more. You can actually do some stuff that you would do in Inspector. You can do that in Visual Inspector as well. But it'll pull up all the colors on the page with the hex codes. It's pretty neat. So that's sort of like a subset of Chrome Inspector. And then, of course, Beaver Builder, if that's a tool that I can list. That's, you know, I don't know if that's cheating to mention that one, but that's on there too.
No, that's a smart way to build things on the internet.
It is, thanks to you. and Sketch is on my list, so I think I might be at 5, but Beaver Builder, I wasn't sure if I could count that. And then QuickBooks, and Stripe. I transitioned over my own website for website maintenance care plans a couple of years ago to have clients purchase them on my website so I wouldn't have to invoice them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been doing that, and it's been a really hard process to get that working accurately with QuickBooks, and I may have just finally figured it out, but I really hate invoicing.
WooCommerce for the connection, or you use
the EDD? I'm using EDD, yeah.
Okay, and it works now?
It's always worked. It's a matter of how it talks to QuickBooks. So when what I like about it is the client is automatically renewed, and they are automatically billed. A lot of my clients pay annually. So this way I don't have to wait for them to pay me, and it goes on their credit card.
That is what I was going to ask you. Like, does recurring, you know, invoices work, recurring payment works fine with that setup that you have? Because recurring is always a pain in getting it worked on WordPress.
So it's more of a QuickBooks issue and a Stripe issue. So what happens is the 50 clients that are paying, you know, whatever amount, it comes into QuickBooks from Stripe as a Stripe customer.
Okay.
So even though if I go into Stripe, I can see client XYZ has this subscription, and I can look in Stripe and see that, and I can look in EDD on my website and see that. In QuickBooks, if client XYZ said, how much did I spend last year with you? I wouldn't be able to tell them quickly from QuickBooks because it doesn't bring them in as their name. But this brings me to my tool, Zapier.
Some say Zapier. It doesn't matter.
I think I've just found the solution that creates a customer in QuickBooks from Stripe.
Yeah.
So Zapier is an amazing tool as well. So that would really be number 5 on my list. Kind of went around the bend on that, but yeah.
Awesome. And I guess now the maintenance clients that you have, you charge them annually, most of them, right?
Yes. I have a few on monthly.
Yeah, because that's easy for you in terms of accounting wise also, and less work for you also.
Yeah, and less email for them, and yes, all of the above. But it has been a process figuring out how to do it. And sometimes I think, why didn't I just set up recurring invoice in QuickBooks? But then what happens is then I'm trying to chase them down, right? Then I forget. And so 6 months go by, and that has happened anyway. I do have some clients who are not in this system. And so I have one of my assistants helping me with this, but it really is a big job. It's a lot of my income. It's a quarter of my income, so it's worth it. But it is, I'm trying to make it more streamlined. And I just raised a couple of my maintenance prices. And so that was also a process of figuring out how to do that. So I think I've figured that out. And I use Boomerang with it to make sure that I can schedule out the whole year of reminder and messages, because EDD doesn't do what I need it to do. So,
you know, we are discussing what so many shiny objects here. Like, people who are going to listen this episode, they are going to make list of tools, and I'm going to explore this. And guess what? This list is not ending.
Well, you know, I have a website, terraclays.com, where I put this kind of stuff. So
awesome.
I have it's like a productivity website. Yeah. Okay, when I was on my agency website, I was blogging a lot about this type of stuff, and it wasn't applicable to my prospects who were wanting to hire me. So I split it off last year into a separate website that was more talking to my peers.
Yeah, because the people who come to your main agency websites, they would not be interested in that kind of content. Because
Correct.
If you tell them, hey, I use this tool for, why should I pay Tara for this? I will just use this tool.
Right. Or yeah, or they're not interested in billing and boomerang and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, so I split it off and I don't blog there as much as I should, but I try to keep my favorite stuff in there.
And which is your recommended web hosting service that you use?
It depends on the client and the project. So WP Engine is like my ideal in some regards. And I really like Liquid Web as well for the same reasons that they have a really easy to manage interface with all of your clients, and Flywheel similarly, although Flywheel has really been having some serious growing pains and they switched their servers. And I have had some issues with Beaver Builder sites on Flywheel that they are aware of and trying to deal with. But I do really like Flywheel. Their pricing is more in line with what most of my clients will pay. So when it comes to web hosting that is easy to manage from an agency standpoint, like you can log in with one login and see all your client stuff, those three all operate that way. GoDaddy also has a pro dashboard where you can ostensibly do that as well. And they are trying.
They're trying for so many years.
They are. They're good people.
They are definitely good people, but their hosting isn't that good. Like I will say bluntly, to be honest, because I always had bad experience with them. So I am a GoDaddy customer. I have lots of domains with them, but that's about it. Hosting is like no go for me because I've even tried their GoDaddy Pro. Some of clients came and guess what? I had to spend like 2 or 3 times more time just to do a thing because their hosting worked on a snail pace.
I haven't had any problems lately. I do have a number of clients who were on GoDaddy or wanted to be. So I do have a number on there. And then the other host that I have a number of sites with, including some of my own, is SiteGround. And what I really like about SiteGround is that you can have multiple websites on an account and it makes it really reasonable. What I don't like about SiteGround is that they don't have they don't have an agency interface. And I've spoken to them about that a number of times. I think they're trying to come out with one that, because if I have 20 clients on SiteGround, I have to go in LastPass and find which login to get into the site. That's a hassle. And I also don't like their CPU throttling. They bring your site down. Sometimes if you're under attack or a plugin that goes weird, they'll bring your site down and you have no notice or anything. So those are my two issues.
All those people who are on your care plans, like, do you include the hosting within the pricing, or like hosting client will pay himself and you will just do the care maintenance updates, etc.?
Yeah, the hosting, they own themselves. If they're on my maintenance plan, I give them my Beaver Builder license, Gravity Forms license, you know, Beaver Themer, all of the premium Beaver Builder stuff, and a few other premium plugins that I own.
And you are responsible for the updates and etc.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. So my next question, you've already answered it and you may have a new answer for it in maybe a few months down the line. Which is your favorite page builder?
Yes, of course it's Beaver Builder.
But you said about a few other.
I don't like their new. I'm struggling with the new.
Yeah. The thing is, the new interface has a lot of options. So you need to, you know, explore, spend some more time to understand those options because it does get, you know, hey, where did I? But then people were complaining Beaver Builder doesn't have these options. Now they've added it.
Yeah, maybe it's just I knew it so well before, and now finding out where to center the headline is not in the same place. And,
it's under the second tab, first section.
Yeah, you have to go into font and styles, but not like alignment and spacing, which doesn't make sense. So anyway, yeah, I have a few issues with it, but I'll get used to it.
And which is your favorite email marketing service?
I don't do a lot of email marketing service. I really only use MailChimp. So I would say MailChimp. I have clients on Constant Contact, and I have a client that uses Active, but for the most part, MailChimp. I love how you can do the RSS from the website into a newsletter. So I really like that.
And last question, any upcoming tool or service that has caught your eye, attention?
So I'm spending a lot of time evaluating SEO tools because I do keyword research for every project that I start now. And for some clients, I do ongoing positioning.
Which ones have you started using? Ahrefs or Raven? There's so many of them.
There are. So SEMrush is the one I've been using. And for the most part, I like it. I don't find it to be the nicest UI, but it's the only one that does a really good job with social media reporting. So I have some clients who want to see sort of what their employees are doing with their social media accounts. So they'll give you screenshots, you know, little thumbnails of the posts and that type of thing. I haven't found one that does that as well, but I'm looking at Moz and a few others. So that's my current focus in terms of tools right now. And Data Studio, as I mentioned, I am trying to learn and create templates that I can use for Data Studio.
Awesome. So before we wrap this episode, any last message for someone who's struggling with the productivity, organization, shiny object syndrome, a lot of problems, any quick short solution for those kind of people?
I think look at some books and plan. I think you just have to really dedicate time to a process of planning and develop a habit. So I really recommend the book Atomic Habits and The 12-Week Year. Those are two books that can really be life-changing in terms of how you approach your day.
And where can people find you?
They can find me on Twitter at Tara Clays. My website is designtlc.com. May I also mention that I have a podcast called Hallway Chats, which I co-host with William Dempsey.
I was going to mention that.
Yeah, so you can find me on iTunes and all of that under Hallway Chats, and we love to chat with people in the WordPress community who would like to share their story, sort of like a Hero Press podcast. We just like to meet people who are not on a lot of other podcasts and introduce them.
So. And a disclaimer, I listen to that podcast every week and it is on my phone app. So it's an amazing podcast. Everyone, please, after listening this episode, go there.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Tara, it was amazing talking to you. Have a good day.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really honored.
You can join the free Web Creators community to learn and share with other web creators at webcreatorsgroup.com. And for more goodness, just head over to smartwebcreators.com. And remember, be smart, keep creating. See you next time.